So as you said, I'm going to talk about injury prevention and rehabilitation for hip and the tennis players. And just sorry about that. Get started. Just to give you a little bit about my background. So I've worked in the field of tennis medicine for, I hate to say it, over 20 years. So I like to say I started when I was really small. My background is, besides working for the USTA, I've worked for the WTA and the ATP. In my current position, I'm responsible for the men's and women's pro circuits and our ITF Elite Juniors and actually some of our collegiates as well. So I have a pretty extensive background in tennis medicine. And in the last 18 months, we went computerized with our medical records. So we actually right now have over 800 athletes that we have medical records for and injury data. So what I'm going to give you today is a historical perspective. So if you're looking for a lot of evidence base, you're not going to get too much, but sorry about that. I'm going to talk about what we see in the training room, and I'm going to talk from the more of the training room perspective, so what we see when the athletes are competing versus what we see in the clinic. Though I'm hoping to give you guys takeaways to go back to your clinics, go back to wherever it is that you work, with some tools to use with your athletes as well. So we're going to talk about patterns of injuries we see as well. So how many, I'm guessing, do all of you work tennis consistently? Does everybody work with tennis all the time? Does anybody not work with tennis all the time? Okay, how many people are athletic trainers in the room? Yes, good. And how many people are physical therapists? Great. And how many people are strength and conditioning specialists? Okay, good. So we have a good mix. Any physicians in the room? Even better. Okay. So they can't argue with me about what I say then. So, which is good. As we know, tennis is a really tough sport on the body. We're asking the athlete to move in multiple directions at one time. We're also asking the athlete to be able to move in different planes of motion at one time. You know, this is not a sport that happens in one direction. You know, as we all know, it's really a rotational sport. We need to keep that in mind when we're thinking about what we're dealing with a player. So, you know, just as a brief review, as we know, the hip is a ball and socket joint. It flexes, it extends, it abducts, it adducts, circumduction, internal and external rotation. And so we're asking the hip to do all of that, and sometimes all of that at the same time when they're playing tennis. And that's something you need to really keep in mind when you're working with these athletes. So, as I said, the hip needs to meet the demand from a stability, mobility, and a strength perspective. And that's something in our assessments, in our training, in our treatment that we need to keep in mind. And I think sometimes what I've found is that we don't always do that, and that's where we get in trouble. The other thing is, I know, and the talk next door is about core, and I know we talked about core and core being critical throughout the kinetic chain, but the hip is just as critical when it comes to the team in tennis, and sometimes maybe it's even a little bit more critical, I think. Because if things don't go well in the hip, they're not going to go well for you below, and they're not going to go well for you above, and then you've got a whole series of other injuries. And I'm going to try to keep this talk just to the hip, if I can. But the hip, there's a lot of overflow. So we're going to talk about that a bit as well. I love this picture because this demonstrates what I was just talking about. You can see, when you look at her left lower extremity, you can see the extremes of hip flexion. You can see also that she's actually internally rotated a bit, and she's also trying to control hip abduction at the same time. And she's actually finished the shot, and she's trying to now, she's going to have to somehow generate force out of that position and head in the opposite direction. So this is, I like this picture just to demonstrate what we're talking about and what we're asking the athletes to do. And the other thing is, this all has to happen like in a few seconds, if that, so.
Is Ali Sarisky okay with her hip?
Pardon?
Is Ali Sarisky okay with her hip?
As far as I know, she is. But that's what you're asking them to do, and if the hips aren't healthy, how are they gonna do anything else? So the majority of the injuries that we see tend to be more chronic than overuse. But we follow kind of a different pattern with our hip injuries. As opposed to having the acute injury that becomes chronic, which does happen, we tend to have the chronic injury that may lead to the acute injury instead. And I say that, we're going to go over it a little bit more later on, but what happens is we see, especially in the females especially, they have a lot of lateral hip weakness, hip abductors, hip external rotators. They need that control, and we're going to go over some mechanical stuff a little bit further, but they need that control in order to serve overhead, and from the last picture we just saw, to control that hip when you're changing direction. What happens is we find that a lot of those athletes develop a lot of chronic weakness in that area, and with that chronic weakness, that hip becomes sloppy. So now it's moving around in the joint, quite a bit. And what we start to see is we start to see impingement, and we actually, you know, more of that anterior medial impingement. We tend to see some labral tears. You know, we tend to see more tendonitis things as well. But and this is not just as, and this is the big term, some of you are familiar with it, is femoral acetabular impingement. I'm not talking about that. I know that that's the big out there term, but we could see that, but that is actually a condition of the joint shape as well. So we're trying to talk about norms today. So femoral acetabular impingement has a lot to do with joint shape as well. So just in general. So we also have gender and age influences. So as I said, so with the females, just because of the way they're built, with the Q angle, you know, versus the males who are, you know, straight up and down, they need to rely more on those lateral hip muscles, you know, the lateral hip musculature. So those adductors, and those external rotators. And so a lot of the females have issues with that, you know, and trying to maintain that. So that's not as easy a thing for the females. For the males, we do tend to see more impingement, as I said, and they would be a little bit more on our acute side than the females would be. So the females tend to be less acute than the males do. And then there's the age, and I didn't know Riley was coming today, but it's too bad I couldn't get him sick, because Riley is a perfect example. And I've known Riley quite a few years as well, but you can see with somebody with a growth spurt. Now, I know we talked about the fact that he has grown a half an inch a year, you know, but Riley at 13 was almost 6'4". Something like that, 6'2", 6'4". So, but he's still growing, and as we know, his muscles aren't growing with him. So all that bone has to catch up. And he's really only caught up probably in the last year and a half, 2 years, I would say, if you looked at. So when the age issues, and then there's the females, you know, we see those really long-legged females. They're kind of sloppy. They look like Gumby. You know, they don't control things well. And so they have a problem as well, because, and you have to think about that. And we're going to go into some mechanics, especially with the serve and the overhead type of strokes, or if they're having to go, like, for the low round ball. They don't do well controlling the lateral motion. So it's something to keep in mind when you're looking at them and when you're rehabilitating them, or when they're, you know, complaining of knee problems and you can't find anything in their knee. We see probably a significant lack of hip extension as well in our athletes. You know, the game itself happens in front of you. You know, very little of it happens behind you. So, you know, they tend to be in a more, you know, flexed position. But the problem is that when you go into the serve, and especially during your wind-up phase of your serve, your cocking phase of serve, you need hip extension. And then you don't have it. And because you don't have it, now you have other problems. So you've got back problems, SI problems, you know, besides hip problems, and knee problems. So it's something that we need to keep in mind. Like I said, I'm doing this more not from what are our injuries, but what can we do to prevent our injuries perspective. We also see decreased hamstring flexibility and increased muscle bulk on the contralateral lower extremity, so on their landing leg. And that probably may be due in part because it's their landing leg. The thing we need to keep in mind is we need to not be fooled by the fact that the muscle bulk is more, so that leg is stronger, because that's not the case necessarily. They may have stronger quads, but functionally, that leg may still not be strong enough to accept the load and what we're asking them to do. So keep it in mind. And last but not least, and I know this was actually interestingly enough touched upon a little bit with Riley this morning, but we see more joint restriction than we do see soft tissue restriction. I mean, these athletes are tight, but the problem with a lot of it is they don't have the joint mobility. And because they don't have the joint mobility, we can't get the flexibility. And it's an area that we don't look at enough. And it's an area we don't treat enough with these athletes. So it's something for us, we do in our training room. I have a staff of 20 that cover, you know, I have over, like you said, 120 events. The majority of our care is all manual therapy. So, and that's what works with these athletes, is the manual therapy in conjunction with the strengthening. But if we don't have them in a healthy position, the strengthening doesn't matter. Okay, so just a quick overview of just the presentation, you know. Got the typical hip pain. I separate the groin pain out because the groin pain, you know, you have that adductor strain that doesn't heal. And they're still complaining about that adductor pain and it doesn't go away. Now, I am a bit of an SI joint nerd too, so I've done the SI talk, so I'm trying to keep away from it. But so it could be the groin pain can be the SI joint, but it also could be the hip. It could be that impingement, it could be a labral tear, you've got a lot of options. So it's something to keep in mind. You know, back pain, because the hip is innervated from, there's a debate, T12 or L1, but, you know, down to S3, so you can get the referral back and forth. And the knee pain, and, you know, you've got your athletes, and they're complaining it's usually typically medial knee pain, but there's nothing there. they have no hip complaints whatsoever, but when you do your whole assessment on them, you can't find anything in their knee, but they're debilitated. So hip pathology will refer down to the knee. It can actually go vice versa as well, but it's something to keep in mind when they're complaining. And the other one I put in there is that nebulous kind of, you know, that proximal medial thigh pain they complain about, you know, they're kind of in there and they're kind of grabbing that thigh and it aches and you can't figure out what the heck's going on. What we need to look at, and I'm just as guilty of it, I'm better about it now, but, you know, we all look at the iliopsoas, you know, and look at, you know, we try to loosen it up and we tell them to stretch it and the whole thing. What we forget to look at is the distal attachment. So on the lesser trochanter, we forget to look at that attachment, and a lot of times, because like I said, the game happens in front, they lack hip extension, and so that iliopsoas isn't spasm, where it's really tight, but when we're treating or looking at it, you know, we're up here in the belly and we're dealing with it this way and we're not dealing with it down below. So you find that actually that pain will clear up really quickly if you remember to treat the other end as well. So, and then, you know, just pain in general, you know, for the hips, it's usually more a position or a movement specific thing. If there, it's not usually a general achy pain, unless, you know, unless they're so far gone, this is usually, you know, your older athlete or your older patient, you know, who has such, you know, degenerative joint disease that it just hurts all the time when they sit, to stand, or whatever. But in general, this is usually more position or motion specific, and if it's not, you really want to look somewhere else. Because especially, you know, we're talking about hopefully healthy, you know, younger people. So hopefully, as I say. So anatomy. I'm only going to do a quick muscular anatomy, just a review of the muscles that I think are critical that we need to keep in mind when we're dealing with tennis players. So, you know, glute max, which is responsible for eccentric control of hip flexion in the closed kinetic chain position and in, you know, concentric return to upright. So we're talking about during the serve, during the overhead, and during the lower ball. So we're talking about, you know, during follow-through, you need that glute max to help slow you down. Okay, you also need that glute max to help you get back up to neutral. That is as critical as the follow-through. And that's something we always forget about, too, because we talk about the phases of serve. And Mark Kovacs, who's going out the door, probably does one of the best biomechanics. You can read his articles or listen to his lectures. They're phenomenal about the biomechanics of stroke. But we never talk about coming back up to neutral. If you read everything, we talk about the finish and follow-through. And that, at least from our perspective with injury and injury prevention, that's not the finish for us. And we actually see as many injuries, if not more, coming back up to neutral. So so glute med. So this one is the big one during serve and overhead. We talked about this is the big one with, and I'll keep hammering at it, but with your younger athletes or with your female athletes as well. So the growth spurts and the females, because it stabilizes the lateral motion of the hip and pelvis. So during that loading or cocking phase, so in that closed chain position, and we're going to go over service mechanics, but it keeps you from getting that lateral hip thrust, which you don't want. You know, and I'll go over it a little bit later, but, you know, you get that lateral hip thrust, and now you have, you know, IT band problems, now you have knee pain, now you have bursitis, and potentially you have hip impingement as well. So something to keep in mind. The other thing it's important for is, and when we talked about muscle imbalances earlier, oftentimes one glute med is stronger than the other, you know, where the external rotators. The problem is you need both. Because during serve, you have to control it in a closed chain position on one side, but then you have to control it in landing, your hip in landing on the other side with the landing leg, so that you don't see that lateral excursion again, you don't get increased forces on the hip, the knee, and so forth. So glute med both sides is critical, and it's not always balanced. So it's important to keep in mind. Iliopsoas, you know, we talked about a little bit also because of that deep thigh thing. But also, you know, it's a side bender of the spine and closed chain, and you want to keep that in mind, too, when they're complaining about back pain. Or if you're still, the hip's a problem and you're treating it, it's another reason why you may want to go up and look at the spine, even if the spine's fine, and do a little bit of work there as well. Hamstrings, eccentric control of the hip flexion in closed kinetic chain. So again, that's going to help you with that, you know, the follow-through, but it's also going to help you with the coming back up to neutral. And I just put piriformis there because I'm trying to avoid the SI, but piriformis, if it's not healthy, it can be a problem for the hip as well. It could be give you an SI problem, it can go vice versa and give you a hip problem, but you need to keep an eye on that muscle as well. Okay, so tennis strokes. Let's see if we can do this right. I will not do this as well as Mark, but I'll do my best for what we need. So if we don't understand what it is we're asking the hip to do, then it doesn't matter. Our assessment doesn't work. Our treatment doesn't work. None of it works. Our training doesn't work. So, because, if, you know, we might as well just kind of throw the dart at the board and hope for the best. So, in the open stance forehand, now this is the absolute worst stroke out there. For any of you coaches or whatever, you can make your case. From an injury perspective, it sticks. This stroke is brutal on the body, at least. We get more injuries since the stroke changed, you know, in the recent years. Like I said, I've done this a long time. So I've seen the strokes change. Our increase in injuries from this particular stroke is ridiculous. So this is a tough stroke. This is not a stroke for your older athlete, okay? Unless they have played and they started younger and they continue to play. This is not the stroke for, like, the 35-year-old, the 40-year-old who decided to pick up tennis. This stroke is too hard to do. It puts too many stressors on the body in funky ways. You need thoracic rotation, you need hip rotation. The stability is poor for this stroke. It is not a great stroke. Now, I'm not saying it's not a good stroke for our players now, but I'm just saying, just to keep in mind, because we do treat all ages, this is not a great stroke for the older ages. You don't want them to start with this. You will end up seeing them in your clinic quite a bit. So try to get them away from that. So what you're asking the hip to do is you're asking, one, you have to load the majority of your weight on your back leg, and then you also have to internally rotate at the same time. So you have to have the ability to stabilize the leg and to internally rotate that leg all at the same time. And so if the hip can't do that, the next thing you know, you've got back problems, you've got knee problems, and you're cheating trying to find things in other areas. And this is why I say, when we said earlier, how critical the hip is, you know, we talk about the core, but why the hip is so critical to injury prevention and training and success as well. So, this is a closed stance forehand. We don't see it very often anymore, which is too bad in some degree. This one, though, it does not require as much hip, you know, as you said, it does not require as much hip load. The thing, too, about this stroke is you can cheat with this stroke. So if you have your older, you know, your older clients, your older patients, whatever, you know, the internal rotation you really need happens on that front leg as you finish the stroke on the follow-through. But, you know, you have a lot of your older patients, especially if they've got some DJD, if they've got some, they just don't have that range of motion. You know, some of them you can stretch all day long, but they've been tight for a long time and they're just going to stay there. This one, you can actually cheat the stroke. So there's a little bit of ability, like you can actually have them turn their foot out a little bit on follow-through, so then they don't have to close down so much on the hip. So this one gives us a little bit more room to cheat with our patients and players. Backhand, so what you need is the internal rotation on that backswing on the back leg. So you need to ask them again to be able to absorb weight and internally rotate at the same time. And then you need the internal rotation on the front leg. But this can be cheated a little bit more as well. So just a brief overview. Now, this is probably the worst or the toughest one on the hip for injury purposes. And this one is the one that requires the most muscle control of anything. So you tend to get injured in this one. I tend to have problems in two phases of it, and we're going to go over both. So first is the loading and the cocking phase. And any of you coaches can feel free to, I'm dead serious about this, feel free to correct me a bit if you need, if so. But what ideally should happen during windup and loading, I should say, and cocking phase of the serve, is the mimic is you're supposed to kind of sit back in a chair. So your butt's supposed to almost be sitting backwards is what's supposed to be happening. That's the position. Whether your feet are together or whether your feet are apart, the majority of what should happen during that phase comes from the anterior line of your body. So it should be, you know, your abdominal muscles, your hip flexors, and your quads should be controlling that motion as you go through. What happens, though, and these are two pretty good pictures, and ignore all the tape on her because who knows why. And she always has tape anyway, I think, every time we see her. But you can see, so what happens though is if you don't have the strength in the leg, we talked about in the lateral structure, so in the hip abduction and the external rotators, you get a lateral hip thrust, which you don't want. And so now what you end up having is you end up having either bursitis problems, as I said earlier, IT band problems, knee problems. So if you look at the picture on the left, you can see for the most part, and what's nice about these two pictures too is they actually use the same stance. So neither one is in a split stance. But you can see that for the most part, she's got shoulders over her hips, over her knees. So she's fairly straight. You know, she's still leaning to the top, but that's pretty normal. And then we also have the angle of the picture, you know. But, and you can see for the most part, I don't know what that tape is for, but you can see for the most part, too, that her knee is, you know, fairly aligned, you know, knee over ankle over toe for the most part. But if you look here on the right, I mean, you can see this. And you can see, too, I mean, she's 6 feet tall. She's 5'10". So, but look at the muscle bulk on her and look at the muscle bulk on her. But she's also a prime example of those of the younger females with the growth spurt as well. I mean, she passed the growth spurt. This is just the way she does it. But you can see the lateral hip thrust in this one. You can also see, so the shading's not great, but the position on her knee is terrible. So if you look at that left lower extremity, you can see that she's actually got a major valgus moment, and she's actually, while she has a valgus moment, she almost looks like she's got an external rotation of her tibia. And a lot of that comes from that thrust of the hip. And so you can see, you know, shoulders are over here, hips over here, knees over here. So it's also not very efficient. So besides the fact that it's a risk for injury, it's not a great stroke. I shouldn't say that. She didn't put it on. It works for her. So I should say that because you don't know what works for their different bodies, and I couldn't tell you what. But because that's the thing, too, is we have to think about is some things we can't change because it may look ugly, but it works for them, and it works well, and they have no injuries. If they have injuries, then you want to think about changing something. If they don't have injuries, you want to leave it alone. So so landing phase on surf. So significant load on the contralateral or the landing leg. So very, if you're elite tennis players, I would say, you know, anybody feel free to tell me what your thoughts are, but I think very few don't hit a jump serve. I said everybody jumps into the court. The majority of contact with the tennis ball is actually made with the feet off the ground. And then they come into the court. So they're coming in a forward motion, and they have to land on one leg at the same time. So that's a lot of force. You know, and you look at some, he's easy to use because he was here this morning and you've seen him. If you look at somebody like Riley, who's, you know, he said he's 6'10". It could be a lot. He might be tall. But you can see how much force, when he has to land, or they're talking about John Isner or whatever, you can see how much force he's going to have to put on that hip, okay, to control it, because that landing and coming into the court. So that hip has to be strong. It has to be stable. If it's not, you've got problems. So, okay, so assessment. This is an interesting one. I don't think we do a good enough job on our assessments. I think there's a piece that we miss, and I think because we miss this piece, our athletes don't do as well as they should, and it's something that we have to look at. You know, we do our traditional strength training, our manual muscle testing. We do our functional tests, you know, that we've all done for years. The problem is we don't look at sequencing. And sequencing is critical. So these athletes can be, as you know, they do all the other tests and they're as strong as possible, but then they're still getting hurt and they still have problems. And it doesn't make any sense for why they're like, well, wait a second, you know, he's a 5 out of 5, or he can, you know, do a single leg squat and it's perfect and everything is running great. So why is it that they're still having problems? And why is it, you know, I can't stress, emphasize this enough, you need to watch them on court. Even if they have to videotape themselves when they're playing and you can't get there, you need to see what it is they're doing, because that's pretty critical. Because they may look strong in the clinic, but they're complaining and you can't figure out why. Everything looks good. So sequencing is a big problem and we need to look at it. So what I do is I've got a series of tests that I use to look at sequencing. All I've done is repurpose stuff that we already use and looked at it in a different way. So we're going to go over those. I'm going to review the assessment a bit, go over the sequencing tests, and then we're going to talk about the treatment too. So I think I'm missing. Maybe I'm not. Who knows? Okay. So clearing first, just as a quick reminder of your assessment of the hips, you need to, you know, you want to clear the back and the SI joint, because if there is a problem there and you don't clear that up, it doesn't matter on their hips, and vice versa.
I have a quick question.
Sure.
They're showing some of the overhead athletes, mm-hmm. their shoulder lack of mobility could be also caused for low back pain.
Yes.
Especially after extension. So I would love to hear your opinion on that and how to dissociate when it's
at the time. I'm laughing because that's my other talk. Because I think y'all know that I did that a couple of years ago. Because no, it's a big problem. And what we see a lot of times is it's kind of that anterior shoulder pain, that nebulous shoulder pain. That my new favorite word, but that it hurts. But like, if you rotate a couple, it's fine. Everything else looks fine. Part of the problem with that is in the back pain is, so a couple things. And this is experience and personal opinion. I haven't seen the study for it, so I can't tell you, but I can tell you what we've seen and what we treat and that they improve. So I can tell you that way. Couple things. One is if they have an SI joint dysfunction, you have to, like we talked about the kinetic chain, you also have to think about the fascial planes of the body and the soft tissue planes. So your lat runs from the front of your shoulder, but it runs from the front of your shoulder, it comes down the side, and it goes into your back. So it also it attaches, and it attaches over your sacrum. So you know it's called your thoracolumbar fascia. So it runs the entire length of. So you've got your lat, and you've got a fascia band that runs that entire length as well. So if your SI joint is out of alignment, this is just one example. But if your SI joint is out of alignment, okay, that's going to change the pull on one side or the other. So now you've shortened that band, so you've shortened that lat, you've shortened that fascia, and now you're asking them to reach up overhead. And so that can potentially be, so that shoulder pain, like that anterior pain that we see and they're not, but we can't find anything, we'll go down below and take a look. If the SI joint does not have to be out of alignment either, and actually I have something in here later on to treat just what you're talking about, because it could just be a lat tightness, it could be a fascial thing. So the SI joint, it doesn't, but yeah, there's definitely a connection between the low back and the shoulder. Go ahead.
Well, my second question, I don't know if you want to touch there. I've seen lots of powerful servers struggling with abdominal strength.
Yeah.
Mainly their rectus.
Huge problem.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the problem too, is when we got, and that's my other one as well, but it's SI, a lot of it is our SI dysfunction because now you've shortened the muscle on one side, you've lengthened it on the other. We see them either acutely or we see them chronically. I have that talk with me. I pull a couple slides up for you later if you want. But we see it acutely, we see it chronically. The other thing is that with the abdominal, it's the hip. So that's why, and that's part of the whole thing, because so if the hip, like we don't have the hip extension, if we don't have the hip extension, now we have to get that extension, the serve, and the overhead from somewhere else. So now we start to arch the back too much, and now we pull the, essentially we pull the abdominal muscle, or we put it in a lengthening insufficient position. And when they're trying to come back forward again, that all of a sudden they pull it because it's so hard in that quick motion to change direction from being lengthened to being shortened. And so, did that help, Phil?
Not yet.
Okay. So anyway, so static strength, you know, I mean, that part's easy. You do the static strength test. If they're not strong, you're not going to go any further than that. With range of motion, so joint mobility, and I should probably put this in big, bold letters, you have to assess this and you have to treat this. So, as I said earlier, if we don't treat it, it doesn't matter, and we have to teach our athletes to treat it. And that's the thing that's always hard, is that, you know, we always think about it has to either be done in the clinic or, you know, how do we get them to do it on their own? So, that's what we need to do, and we're going to go over that a little bit later, and flexibility. And then, your traditional functional test. But ankle stability is critical, and you have to look at ankle stability. The only evidence base I will give you in my lecture, other than that, is that there are actually studies done that show that with poor ankle stability, there is delay in firing of the glute med. So, and as we've said, the glute med is a critical muscle for us in, you know, in control, the serve and tennis stroke, and for the hip. So if that hip, that's not firing, then that's a problem. So I will sometimes say, I'm going to go back to the SI joint too, but I have treated the hip sometimes by actually giving them a device in their shoe. Because sometimes it's a matter of if we can control the ankle motion. You still have to do the rehab and so forth, but if you... Question?
Sure.
Go for it. I'm all about questions, so you guys can feel free to ask as we're going.
For the ankle stability, do you then suggest just manual work, manual resistance for the athlete, like holding onto their feet, making sure that they can push, pull?
To assess it or to...
Treated.
It depends. I have an exercise for it going further down in the slides, but I try to treat it functionally because they're standing. So it doesn't really help. I mean, if they don't have anything, then yes, I will start like with band exercises and manual therapy and things like that. But if we're past that and it's a functional problem, we're going to go over some landing stuff and things like that, and they can't control it then I'm going to want to try to treat it in the standing position. And do things in that way, and I can give you I'll give you guys a few examples of other stuff that I do because it's easy to do, and it's easy for them to do. It's not a hard thing to do. It's a hard thing to get them to do it. So I'll show you a couple things in that. Okay, so these we're gonna go through my tennis specific and I don't have to bridge, so who the heck cares, right? As I said, all I do is I took the same things and I repurpose them. And I look at them in a different way because I'm thinking about the tennis game now, and I'm thinking about how they should be able to move in their tennis game, and whether or not they're doing it well and whether they're firing in the correct order. So I start with a bridge. I know it's my basic, but if they can't fire correctly in this position, how are they supposed to fire the muscles correctly when they're standing? So it determines for me if the glutes are firing and if the muscles are sequencing correctly along the posterior chain. So what you will see, and if you go back to your, like, your SI or even the shoulder, as you mentioned earlier, those shoulder pain patients, it's a good exercise for them. I use that one as well. Because a lot of times what you see is you see that as opposed to firing glutes, they end up being very adductor dependent. So you just ask them to bridge, and all I do is say, okay, go ahead, lift your butt. Because I don't give them any cues to start because I want to see what they do. I want to know their strategies. So they lift their butt, and it, you know, all of a sudden they do this. You know, the butt comes up and their knees are coming together at the same time. You know, we all know we don't want to see that when they do a bridge, but that's a good indicator too that there may be some sort of a muscle imbalance or that there's some sort of pathology somewhere in that whole ring going on. So I ask them to lift their butt to see, you know, how they do that first. I also am looking at which way they fire their muscles. So what I want to see is I want to see hamstring, glute, and then back extensors is what I want to see. Because if you think about it, later on, like when we put them in standing, or we're going to look at this in standing as well, but when they're doing that wind up in their serve and their, sorry, the fall through in the serve, and going down to the low short ball, the overhead, when they go down, they have to, that's all I have left. Who started late? That's, are you serious? Who started late? The lady started till 10. I should have 15 more minutes. I don't know. We started late, that's on him. Because I have this time, right? So, sorry about that. Okay, so we're going to go quick, and then you can ask me later. Alright, so this is going to tell about the posterior and the hip chain. We're going to go quick now, you guys. Sorry about that. So, it's going to tell me if they're firing correctly as they go down and then come back up. I'm just trying to get back on schedule. Shoot. I was supposed to go till 10:30, but we didn't start till 10, so. So, alternating single leg hop. Okay, so what you're looking at, so this is for the serve, okay? So we're looking at, you know, whether you're just asking them to, you know, hop from one leg to the other, and we're asking them to reach at the same time because they have the racket in the hand. And we need to, I don't do it with the racket in the hand to start, but we need to think about that because we need to think about what they have to do. The racket does make a difference with how they're moving. You know, you're looking at whether or not the knee, you know, the usual medial and lateral control of the knee, the control of the hip. You want to check the trunk. You want to make sure they're not collapsing forward. Like, do they have good control of the trunk at the same time? Do they land softly? Is their lateral, you know, is their hip going lateral in a lateral thrust motion? Because all of that mimics that serve, especially, that landing leg on the serve. So,
this, what's this start position?
It's just starting on, they literally just start on one leg and then hop, it's a hop to the other. So it's a traditional single leg hop exercise. But then, like I said, if they're good with that, and there's no problem. You also look at ankle stability in this one as well. If they're good with that, then I add the racket. Because I want to know if the racket makes a difference. Because, and if they're great with that, then I leave this one alone. But if they're not good with that, then I'm going to have to come back to it. So, single leg reach, similar. But the thing is it gives me more information about their control going down. And as I said earlier, the ability to come back to neutral is as critical in injury as it is the ability to go forward. This tells me whether they can come back to neutral. What you'll see if they can't or if they have weakness, like if they don't have the glute strength, which is so critical, you see them arch their back. So they kind of do this to get back up. You'll also see that they may thrust their hip backward, and now you've got some posterior hip pain, lateral hip pain as well. So, and again, I'm looking at sequencing. When they come back up, I want to see hamstring, glute, back extensors is what I want to see. I don't know if I will see them. So let's just say, if I get this, then I get this, obviously things aren't going so well. You know, so something to take a look at. And the last one is, and this one is the one that really helps with the ankle stability. And I'll give you a picture, but it's single leg balance with internal and external rotation. Because as we talked about earlier, you have to be able to load that back leg and internally rotate it on that open stance forehand. And you have to be able to do the same thing on the other side. So if they can't do this, then we have, you know, then we have a real a problem. So this is great for open stance strokes, and this also tells me what's going on with their ankle as well. So all you're asking them to do is it's easy. They literally just have to stand on one leg, okay, balance on one leg, and you just ask them to rotate one leg and then rotate back the other way. It's as easy as that. But what you're looking at is how they move. Ideally, you want shoulders over hips, and you want them to move in a straight line on either side. What you see a lot of times is they do this, and the shoulders go one way, and the hips are staying back here, that you see them lift one shoulder. You also, like you can see for him, and he's actually been in a growth spurt recently, but you can see he almost has like a writing reaction with his arm as well. Like he's like he actually almost has a neurological pattern in order to keep his balance. So this is tough. And also you're looking at the ankle to see, because you want the ankle to stay still, or mostly still, so if they're wobbling or really rolling to one side or the other, then that's a problem as well. So, okay, so we're going to go quick because he's only 1 to 2 minutes. So anyway, so goals. We got to maintain joint mobility. It's critical. As I said earlier, if joint mobility is not there, it doesn't matter. Prevent the muscle imbalance and then proper muscle sequencing. So I'm going to go over a couple of self-joint mobilizations because that's the other thing. The problem is we mobilize them 1 week and they go off and they play for 3 weeks. Then they come back in the clinic again or in the gym and wherever and we mobilize them again. It doesn't work. You're back to where you started. So we need to give them the way to do it themselves, and I'm going to give you a couple of things on how they can do it themselves. And then also, it's the KISS principle for me. So those exercises, whatever didn't work out, that's what we do. So it's as easy as that. So is that whichever of the assessments didn't work, we give them. Now, the key for these athletes is we need to keep the exercise program accessible and portable. And the only thing that you need from what I'm about to show you is a TheraBand, a yoga belt, or a gait belt, and a towel. And that's it. So if they tell you they don't have that stuff, let them go. And I use the rule of four because they won't do more. I think we've all said how many times we give an exercise program and nobody does a damn thing. So I found that if we keep it to four, no more than four, we have good results. Like two sometimes is better, but...
What's the KISS principle?
Keep it simple, stupid. Sorry. Sorry about that. KISS, I use it quite often because it's just easy. But anyway, I'm the stupid one, just so you know, not the rest of you. But yeah, so they won't do it. And everything is about, it's about consistency. It's not about numbers. You give them 10 exercises and they only do them like twice in 3 weeks. What's the point? So so self-mob, all they need is the TheraBand. It's a TheraBand. And it shows too because he's in his backyard doing this for me. This is, he was kind enough to do this for me. But I mean, like I say, it's portable. We tied the TheraBand to the fence. I like the mobilizations to be in the functional positions because we're asking them to move in a functional direction. So if we're just doing everything in normal straight planes, it doesn't translate well. So he can be on one side, you know, he's almost in that what they call the pigeon pose or the figure four. I don't like the knee turned out this way because I think it just stresses the knee too much. But you put him on one side of the fence, have him lean one way and then the other, and then you just flip the legs and put him on the other side of the fence. Or whatever, I should say, the other side of the band. So you can see this one's good for internal and external rotation. Next is standing hip extension, because as we said, they have no hip extension. It doesn't look like much. It works really well. I do it in standing. I know the traditional self-moves are done in like high kneeling and quadruped. The problem is they're not in high kneeling and quadruped. And if you can't see, I've got my computer with me, so if it doesn't show up well, I'm happy to open my computer for you guys to see the pictures better later. I can do that if you need them, so I can see that shadow is not great. Sorry. But all you're doing is, so you put the band on the back of the leg. You want to go, you need to make sure you're below the joint, okay? You're putting, and you have to stand up nice and straight. I'll have them tighten their abdominal muscle just so they can't cheat, so bring their belly button to their spine. You have the leg you're mobilizing is the toe is just roughly at the back heel. That's all the distance you really need. Otherwise, you start to cheat into the back too much. And you're just asking him to push his heel into the ground. He's just extending his leg, okay? But when he extends, that band is actually giving him some anterior translation of the hip. So it's helping with that extension stretch. The other thing it's good for, too, is when they don't have glute firing, it's a great way to do glute exercises with some tactile cues in standing. So we talk about like do those four exercises or getting, I try to get as much bang for my buck out of one thing I can. So it's like, this is like a twofer for me. You know, I'm getting a few things out of it.
Sure. I can't see the
I know, that's why I said I'm happy to open up my
two.
Oh, no, okay, there we go. Okay, we didn't know. And this is the one when you asked earlier about the lat. So this is, and I can show this later in the back, but this is like, I give everybody this, is the best. So this kicks curve everything, and if you think about that, the single, the reach, you know, we did the single leg reach, If you think about the position he was in, he had his, you know, he was flexed, hip back, forearm extended, okay? So this mimics that as well. So you're getting a lat. What you're getting out of this is you're getting hamstring stretching, which you need. You're getting a posterior mobilization of the hip, so you're getting, the hip is actually being pulled back, but you're also then adding a functional lat stretch, which is a position they have to be in when they play tennis. You can progress, you know, if they have a ball, great. If you don't have a ball, put them near a wall. I can show you guys in the back how to put that on. So all it needs is, now this one you have to have a yoga belt for, because you need something firmer or a gate belt, but I mean, you buy a 12-foot yoga belt and you're done. They don't cost much money. I think it's 12. Whatever the longer one of the two is.
The band around the waist.
No, it's through the legs. So it actually, yeah, I'll show you in the back. I can bring the band. I'll use something else. But so it's almost like if you mount climb, I don't do, but you put the band, they step into the loop. You make sure the loop is, the snap is here, because you don't want them leaning on the snap. And then you actually pull it from the front through the back. And then, like, if you're in the gym, like when I used to have my, I had my own practice in the, like in the gym, I hook it, you know, like a lot of times on the, like the cable, across cable machines, they have a hook that sticks off the cross. It's like just the right height, because it needs to be a little bit above, it shouldn't be at hip height, it should be a little bit above hip height. But he can actually do okay. The other thing is you want to make sure, see how his back is nice and flat? Because they get kyphotic, and that's a problem as well. So you get that increased kyphosis. So with the back nice, you want to make sure that he only goes as far as he can with that back nice and flat. So some of them are like this. Now, when they get better, you can take them to the ground. If when they get there, he's not going near there that anytime soon. And the heels have to stay on the floor. And if anything, he's a little forward, like his butt should be back a little bit more. So, okay, so then it's easy. The functional exercises, so the KISS principle, like I said, the treatment becomes, the assessment becomes the treatment. So you've got the glute firing, so we want to focus on making sure we're shutting off the adductors. We want to work on sequencing, so making sure they're sequencing in the right order. And, you know, it's easy to progress to a physio ball, to tabletops, you know, and even when you're actually traveling, you know, there's always a gym, and everybody has a physio ball these days, so how hard is that? Single leg hop, so it's the same thing that we just did with the exercise. I will start them without the racket. I will start them just with basic single leg hop. Make sure that they're accepting, you know, loads correctly. Make sure they're using that trunk correctly. So like I said, if you see the ones that are collapsing forward too far or having issues coming back up, that's all going to be under control first. Once they have control of that and they look really good, then I'll add the racket. If in my assessment they were good without the racket and then the problem was with the racket, then I do it with the racket. So, but it's as easy as that. And they can do this, you know, wherever they travel. It's not hard. And then, so single leg reach. So this one, we're going to show two different ways. So he can use a ball, he can use something else. So this part works more on the eccentric control going forward, okay, with touching with the ball. Same thing, he's going to pivot around the hip. He's not great at it, let's be honest. He's tall. He did it for me last minute. So, but he's going to pivot around the hip, and then he has to come back up. I just need 1 minute, and I'm done. So he has to pivot around the hip, and then he comes back up, okay? But again, it's the sequencing coming back. So we want to see that hamstring, glute, and back extensors coming back up. But once he gets good at that, you can also do it with the TheraBand. And this one's really going to work more on that coming back up. But you can see with the TheraBand how much lower he gets. And he needs that because, you know, any of your players know, if you picture them, like, sprinting towards the net for that drop shot, and they sprint towards the net for that drop shot, and, all, you know, they're down there like that. Now they have to come back up quickly, and then they have to get back, you know, the baseline or wherever it is they're headed. So that's why it's, as, like I say, that's the phase that I think is as critical. It's not the one we talk about as much. And then the final exercise, and we're done, is the single leg balance. I put them on the towel, but I don't start them on the towel, so when we talk about the stability, I just start them in standing. Sometimes I'll take the shoe off, sometimes I'll put it on. If they wear an orthotic device, I'll do it, make sure that I'm doing it with them in that insert in their shoe. But when they get good at it, you know, and they can do it well, to make it harder, all they have to do is go in the bathroom and grab a towel. So, and then they're done. So it's, that's easy as well. So, final slide. Oh, well, that was that one. But, so anyway, so just a quick summary is that, like I said, the hip injuries tend to be more chronic than overused, that we have gender and age issues, and that they tend to have more joint restriction than they do soft tissue. And that, like I said, so the key is a really comprehensive assessment where we add the sequencing component.